I did have my first launch-related dream last night.
Ooh, okay, what you got?
And it wasn't exactly a nightmare. It was like somewhere in the in-between space because
it I was looking exactly at it. Like what a launch is, generally
speaking. Yeah, that was exactly right. Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 256 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm the webs programmer.
I'm Sam, and I'm the art maker.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is April 24th, 20 Blundy. And before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be some swears on this show.
Launch swears. The most exciting
some of the
guy.
Words, they're going to be bad. So yeah. Just be ready for that. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net, where we grab people's money. This week, we grabbed Specchio's money.
It's a good repeat grab, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, just keep double dipping into there. Specchio says, congratulations on the launch of the best maker game ever. Congratulations on the launch of the best maker game ever. I don't know why he said it twice, but
sometimes you got to scream it from the hilltops, you know? Yeah. You just got to get it out there.
Yeah.
That was for the people in the back, you know?
Yeah, for those of you in the back who couldn't hear it. We also like to thank our recurring supporters as well. Thank you very much. Let's talk about what is happening this week. Now, first, before we get into the real news, I just want to quickly point out this is our last One Byte episode.
256.
This is episode 256. Now, as we all know, binary is made of zeros and ones, and a byte is 8 zeros and ones. Right, there's 256 possible numbers in there, so
or
one
just
byte
things.
Yeah, so we have hit the point now where if we want to do one more episode, we're gonna need 2 bytes to store the numbers.
It's a good time to graduate into 2 bytes. You know, right before launch.
It is now importantly for us to get into the 3 byte range. It's gonna now take another 1,255 years.
That escalated quickly.
Things escalate quickly. So if we wanted to try to get into the 3 byte range, maybe do like one episode a day, that would still take us 179 years. So I think probably
2 bytes will be enough, I think. If we were setting up a database to store all of these numbers in it, just probably call it 2 bytes.
We'll stick with the 2.
There's a good chance that I would have been like, 1 byte seems like enough because –
That seems to be what we do.
That's a lot of episodes.
1 byte's enough. We're never going to get to episode 256, 257. Nope. All right, let's talk about the real news. Levelhead.
Levelhead
is launching this week.
This
episode comes out on the 29th, and the launch is on the 30th. And we're recording just a few days before that, so we don't know what's going to happen necessarily. So let's talk about the things that we do know, which is where the game's coming out. All right. So you guys ready?
I'm ready. Yeah. Give me the rundown.
I'm not sure if I might need to go get like a drink of water in the middle of this, but you know. All right. Because of how long the list is.
Get out a notepad. Levelhead is launching on Thursday, April 30th on Google Play, Google Play Pass, the App Store, Steam, Switch, Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, the Epic Store, and the Microsoft Store.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. And fun news, Crashlands is free on the Epic Store also beginning
at the same time.
At the same time.
The same dang time.
And if you get Epic, or sorry, if you get Crashlands for free,
you get a little discount.
It costs you nothing. You get a 10% discount for nothing on Levelhead. You just get one game. For free, and then we're just paying you to get Crashlands.
Just get it.
So go throw Crashlands into your library. Get 10% off on Levelhead. Throw that in your library.
Yeah, and you can also do this on Steam. You just also have to buy Crashlands because
they're bundled on Steam, so you get a 10% discount if you buy both on Steam.
And I think even if you already have bought Crashlands on Steam, you still get a discount.
You can still do the bundle. Yeah,
yeah.
So get in there, get the game. It is coming out of early access on Steam, and it's hitting all these other platforms.
Coming out
for the first time.
How you guys feel it? Because it's happening.
I'm feeling good.
Yeah,
I'm feeling apprehensive, not about the launch, but just that I've haven't had a lot of game programming to do in the past week, and I don't know what that I've lost my sense of self. Know what I mean? Like, the game is done. I don't know who I am anymore.
I mean, for the past more than 2 years, Seth has spent every waking moment of certainly every workday, and many waking moments of most weekends, and
well,
many
yeah, because the moments during the workday when I'm sleeping, I'm not working on the game exactly at those times.
We spent basically every moment programming Levelhead or thinking about programming Levelhead, and he had to stop.
Yeah, this past week I've done stuff like write the new employee handbook for new players, the Bureau of Shipping new
which
employee
is
handbook. Doing stuff like popping into meetings, talking about advertisement strategies, reviewing email newsletters,
doing quarterly reviews, talk about the future, doing business.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, and it's weird because I know we've talked a lot in the past about this idea of like it's very easy to think that you're only like being productive if you're producing something that you can point to and be like, I made that thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that it's a lot harder to get into the mindset of like doing useful things and being productive also includes planning for stuff.
Well, not only that, but actually if you were to keep programming the game, you would actually create more problems for us. Because
yeah, I know. I've been really trying hard. Like I've been playing a lot of video games on the weekend because I'm like, don't program,
don't
any new features, just chill out, just let the game launch, and then start creating problems for everybody.
It is a trick. I did have my first launch related dream last night.
Ooh, okay, what you got?
And it wasn't exactly a nightmare. It was like somewhere in the in between space. Because
it sounds looking exactly at it. Like what a launch is, generally.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I was looking at a chart. So we have all this like fun back end charts and things that we can watch things live as they unfold, right? And so I was looking at one, and I will say in my dreamscape, because I don't have, we've talked about this in the past, no, not going to go into it, but I don't have visual memory and I can't picture things in my mind. So the chart that was in my mind was very boring and simple, you know, which was kind of a bummer.
It was more of the idea of a chart.
It was the idea of a chart. I was kind of upset with my dream self for not being more creative. But so I had this chart. It was just like this boring ass line. But the important thing were the numbers on the axis, which were very big, like crazy big, like six. It was like 16 million, right? So not 100% sure what those numbers were for, but it doesn't even matter because whatever it was, that means there's a lot of people.
That's a lot.
So
hopefully it's day one uninstalls. Because that means that the install base is in the billions.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the dream. I saw this, and then I remembered though in my dream state, because part of my plan before launch is to go over provision all of our server resources so that we definitely have more than enough for any reasonably large sort of outcome. But I haven't done that yet because I was going to do that a few days before launch. And so in my dream, I still knew that I hadn't done that. Right? All of a sudden, these numbers are really high, and I was like, "Oh my god!" Right? I need to go check on the web infrastructure right now. And so then in my dream, I was like logging into Amazon AWS and like doing all this, like trying to figure out if things were fine or not. Only to discover that the numbers suddenly came all the way back down to like what they are today. Because this is where the fuzzy dream logic. I don't really understand what this was supposed to be, but there was some other game that was somehow hosting Levelhead. Like people were playing Levelhead from inside of it somehow. Well,
they somehow took it.
Yeah, they somehow took it and it was just in there. So people were still playing it. So this game was like, really successful, whatever this thing was.
Sure. This is your WoW private server situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that somehow Levelhead became very successful very briefly within the context of this other game and then came back down and then it was fine. But I still woke up right afterwards being like, oh God, I need to go shore up the web infrastructure. Cause it took me a while to process that the launch had not happened yet.
Yeah. Dude, I hate that. I always have those dreams where I will in my dream get an email or something. Like I'll be doing something else completely unrelated in the dream. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, ooh, and then
it's like a normal dream.
Just like in real life, I'm going about my business. And then all of a sudden, you know, I get an email or a notification about something. And it's a screenshot of a game maker error from a crash. And in the dream, legit, in the dream, it will have lines of code and object references and stuff. But it's always the case that it just absolutely doesn't make sense given what I actually know about the game. Yep. And so then in the dream, I then drop everything and I go and hunt down and I'm digging through code that my brain is like imaginary code that's not real. and I'm like debugging stuff in the dream and then I wake up and there's, like you said, there's always that
residual 2-minute window piece. Yeah.
Where I'm freaking out about this new crash in the game and it's not real.
It's funny. These are your guys' nightmares because mine are actually much quieter where they're more about nothing happening. Because yeah, it's like
that's in some ways that's my good dream, you know.
Like, yeah. Well, yeah. That's the thing. Like, if I look at my email inbox, it's sort of like it's like we launched and then nothing happened. Mm-hmm. Did get no one played, no emails, no tweets.
It, to be fair, no I am nothing. Still worried about that. But I mean, it's a different kind of worry. Yeah. Because for me, like the anxiety of that is like that's just a huge bummer, and then makes me concerned about then the future of the studio versus. Mm-hmm. Everything literally being on fire right now, which is it's much that more long immediate. Term versus the short term sort of stress. So well, pre-launch, I'm much more worried about everything being on fire than mm-hmm. I am about nothing being on fire.
Yeah, but let's talk about that. We've done a lot. Yeah, I mean we've done a lot. We are one of our big sort of I wouldn't call it a gamble, but one of our sort of bets is it just is the case that the game did not get traction in early access.
Yeah.
You know, and we pointed to a lot of different things that might explain that. But it's been hard to explain because it has a 97% positive on Steam. Like the mm-hmm. the people who have gotten into it are just like, oh, like fuck, this is so good. Mm-hmm. overwhelmingly. And that's actually that's how Steam describes that rating level is overwhelmingly positive, right? And but it's still the case that getting people to buy the game in that phase on Steam Early Access has just been very hard to do for some reason. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who get into it are just absolutely loving it, but it's hard to get them there. And so we pointed to a lot of things that might explain that. So we're like, maybe just that it is an early access, that it's been hard to get streamers and press and YouTubers and stuff, again, because it's early access and they tend to not cover early access games. So we pointed all those things and we're like, we have to think of all the reasons why somebody might not get into this game, just mm-hmm. like just boot it up and start playing it and do everything possible to push against those things at the full launch. Just obliterate all those reasons. And so we got a bunch of them. You know, one is people who are like, oh, well, I don't have a PC or I don't play games on Steam, right? There's a huge proportion of people.
And in fact, a huge proportion of our audience because Crashland's most successful platforms were both on mobile, right? Android right. and iOS. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Steam was much, much further down the list in terms of our player base for Crashlands. And so, of course, like launching on iOS, launching on Android, you know, these are a big deal. But also then getting the game into existing services where people don't have to make a purchasing decision. And that's where Xbox Game Pass comes in and Google Play Pass, where it's like if you're already a subscriber to these things, you all you have to do is just boot the game up.
Yeah, like it just has to look interesting enough to be worth the, you know, 30 seconds of download time. Or
yeah, and it's a 220 megabyte download or something. So like it's going to download so fast that you don't even really get the opportunity to change your mind about downloading right. it when you click
that button. You're in there now. That's it.
Yeah. You know, you see those games that are like 120 gigabytes, you know, and you start to download it and it's like, come back in 6 weeks, yeah. You know, and at that point you might move on to other things, but like Levelhead is just gonna be on your computer,
yep.
And or on your Xbox, and so we have done everything possible to try to break into those things, and then the other one is just an awareness thing. You know, the comment that we got a lot through early access was even for people who started playing the game, they were like, "Why did I not hear about this?"
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you know, like why. Why is nobody talking about this game? Why are streamers not playing it? Why are big YouTubers not playing this game? And of course, we ourselves are asking the same question.
It's not like we weren't trying.
Why aren't they?
Yeah.
And so one of our big lessons for this has been the advertising side of things, which is like, you know, part of it is you reach out to press and streamers and YouTubers and all that, and you tell them about your game. But their incentives are the same as everybody else's, which is they want to cover and make videos about and write about things that people are already excited about. Because mm-hmm. if people are excited about it, they'll go read the article, right? Or they'll go watch the video. And so if you have a game that doesn't already have a huge amount of excitement around it, then you're actually asking all these other players to take a risk by taking the time to make videos about your game
or without necessarily having an audience.
Yeah, without there being an audience of people who already want to read or view those things. Mm-hmm. And so a big part of our strategy for Levelhead has been to try to learn how to play the advertising game, you know, and build awareness and spread those videos out and
if I could live the rest of my game dev career without ever having someone say, how have I not heard about this, about a game that we made, then I will be very, very happy. Yeah. Because that was honestly like one of the the crudest barbs during early access launch.
Yeah,
because we're putting hundreds of hours. Yeah, we're putting hundreds of hours into spreading the word about the game.
And contacting over 1,000 people, you know.
Yep.
In turn have audiences of at least 1,000 and often hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, that comment.
Well, and the cruelest one is when people actually comment that on the trailer.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is you hearing about it. Like you're here now. Yep. We got you here. We did it, you know?
Yeah.
The idea is it's sort of like they should have always already heard about it, sort of perpetually, you know, into the past.
But I think it's a perfectly fair point, to be honest. It is. It's absolutely. Like, yeah, you're right, you know? And I think that's the cruelest barb of all, you know, when it hits you and it's true.
But if you think about the resources of a small studio like us relative to a big studio. So some interesting examples from the recent past would be when Fallout 4 was announced, Fallout Shelter was released, right? Like they released a mobile game the same day as they announced the upcoming game. And that was the campaign.
Right.
Like that was
The marketing campaign.
Yeah. The marketing campaign, yeah. And it's such a well-known IP that they already had millions of people tuning in just to watch the announcement for the release date for the game, right? Yeah. Like what happens when we announce a release date?
Nobody gives a shit.
Like, yeah, we got to pay to put a press release out and we got to, you know, like we're still very small potatoes and we don't have that inbuilt audience of having that huge IP yet.
Yeah.
Maybe Levelhead will be that IP.
Well, that's the whole thing though. So when you talk about, you know, what have we done with Levelhead sort of in preparation for the launch, it's more true this time than it has ever been that every lever that we know that exists, we are pulling on. There's just like one or two left that we don't have actually the cash to do something with. Right. There's some other sort of, you know, influencer campaigns and other stuff that we still don't have the money to actually do. But there's everything else we're doing, and we're doing in a way that we found to be efficient in terms of getting eyeballs and getting some attention and stuff. And so really it's just – this is the weird part of like the pre-launch because everything's done. We sent out the press keys last Thursday. Everything is done. Yeah. The game's been through cert. It's all just – as Seth said, he's just been hanging on, just doing some other stuff around the studio.
I've been doing that thing a lot where like you sit in a chair and then your leg bounces up and down. You know, I've been doing a lot of that.
Yep. A lot of that. Adam has shored up all the web systems so that we don't have the error 37 problem, you know, on launch day.
Well, or we hope anyway.
Do we hope? And yeah, in the meantime, then, you know, Sampy and I have been just slinging emails as far and as wide as we can, writing the ballyhoo, doing all this stuff. And so you just kind of like – the reality is that whatever's going to happen has been completely set in motion and there's just nothing else at this point really. And so I think it's interesting to talk about, you know, the reality of doing a launch well, which means that actually a good couple of days at least before the launch, you should have this feeling of it being kind of locked in, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
it's all been done. So, I mean, yeah, you can freak out as much as you want. You just need to be reactive to like throwing keys to people if they ask for them, you know, for certain streamers and YouTubers and press. But for the most part, it is what it is now. And so then you play the waiting game, which is the worst. The waiting game is just the worst game. It's terrible.
Yeah, because this whole week. So yeah, we're recording this on Sunday. Launches on Thursday. So the whole week, our ads aren't going out. Our press have been contacted, but they're not supposed to write reviews until launch
29th.
Day.
Yeah, day before
29th. And right? Same thing with like YouTubers and streamers and stuff we basically said.
Well, and there's no point for them to even do it until there's already a community.
Until there's an audience, which is launch. Yeah.
Yep. So they won't. And also most of them aren't going to tell us. Like, I think we do have a handful of people who have actually said at least that they're really interested, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have anybody who's guaranteed.
You never get a guarantee.
We have these literally, you know, 1,000 outstanding potential press items, right? That may or may not come through, and we won't know until basically starting the day before launch. And then even going, actually probably the first week after, is what we saw with Crashlands. So our ads aren't going out. So we still this weird. We're in this weird phase.
We're just hanging out.
The game is still technically available, right? Which is the weirdest part of all of it is that
because we're that's early been
the part
because we're in early access. It's just so weird. Like the game is actually available, and yet we're waiting for this like really big moment. Right?
Well, let's talk about the 1.0 though, because I think we do have a bunch of news. There's a bunch of stuff actually in the 1.0, which I don't know if we even talked about basically ever because we've been thinking about it in terms of it being already in.
I mean, it's mostly the tutorial and then campaign improvements.
Yeah.
We did talk about the tutorial quite a bit in a few episodes back because mm-hmm. it's been done for quite a while. Because our plan was to basically be ready for launch a month before launch.
Yep.
Is this tutorial available in early access? I thought we made it.
Nope. It's on the beta branch on Steam, but will become the live branch.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, it's in that point where we've done everything that we possibly can do. And what comes next is now a question of, did this thing that we made, did it actually match what we thought the market would like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. is there an audience for a game like this? That is a sizable audience. Like, we know that there is one, but how big is it? Yeah. And where are those people?
How big is it and how do they find out about it? Because this is actually one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot now in retrospect is the way that we originally were thinking about this was we looked at Mario Maker and thought there's no game that's been successful like to a large degree like this on anything except for at that time Wii U or whatever mm-hmm. the original.
Yeah, original Mario Maker was on the Wii U. So we started development for Levelhead in January of 2018. So Mario Maker 2 had not been announced and would not be announced for over a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
we thought – anyway, at the time too, we figured even if it did end up coming out, it would only be on the Switch and so we'd sell all the other platforms. And I think that in a lot of ways that's still true. But I think the interesting thing we didn't think about though was that because of the fact that the only game out there really was Mario Maker, this isn't an established genre. Right?
Correct.
So there's Mario Maker, and then that's it. And there are a handful of games that have come out and tried to kind of do the same thing. And actually, if you look at people talking about them, they don't talk about it in relationship to Mario Maker, really. There just seems to be kind of – those games just haven't done very well. And I think it's because people who play Mario Maker aren't thinking about themselves as playing a genre of game. Like people who play a lot of first-person shooters like think of themselves as FPS players, right? So people are like RTS players or RPGs, whatever. Like they play certain genres, and then as a new game's come out in that genre, they go try out that new game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But games like Mario Maker, or I guess the game like Mario Maker, right, hasn't established a genre in such a way that people are thinking of them. They just think of themselves as Mario Maker players, not as platformer maker players.
Yeah.
And so people aren't actually looking for a game like this. And even those who just don't – and those who don't have the platform and have never played Mario Maker and don't even know about it – aren't even thinking about games like this because it's not out there as an established genre.
Yeah, well that's sort of the weird strategic thing I think that you're absolutely right that we missed at the start, which is we got so excited about seeing what we thought was a hole in the market, which is true. Yeah. I still believe it's true. We'll find out on Thursday.
That we didn't realize that the market wasn't even there actually.
Well, the market
didn't know it was there.
Yeah,
you have to create the market.
It's a blind market, right? So yeah, if the genre doesn't exist, and this is kind of like, you know, we have, I saw someone actually in our comments, someone was asking about some of the similarities and differences the question of, you know, when you take inspiration from a game in a space where there's only one of those games, right? So in the case of us and Mario Maker, in the case of the example they gave was Doom and Quake, right?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is until there's enough games in a genre that talking about them all individually is annoying – You don't really make a genre for them. You just like they ended up being sort of they feel like you know Quake called a Doom clone or whatever else afterward. Until you have enough of these first person shooters that you actually have this new term show up, right?
Yeah, the genre sort of supersedes.
You don't see things like Call of Duty 7 is the best Doom clone yet.
Right. It's just in a genre. So I think that's the weird thing is that part of it has to do with tools, right? Is that all the tools have gotten powerful enough now where game making games are a thing. Dreams just came out and it's like absolutely ridiculous.
Where Dreams is in its own category, like so because it's so far into the just like the actual.
It's actually so close to game dev
space.
Yeah, also people use it to make even anything. Like things that aren't games. You know, like weird interactive movies. And
yeah,
it's hard to even say what that is.
Yeah,
right. Which again is an interesting challenge. You know, for them. There's
nothing like it. How do you sell it? Right.
And that's, if you think about games that have succeeded in this way in the past, that's always been the big challenge is if you're the first in a space, then there are no rules and people are just excited about the novelty of the thing. Right.
Yeah. If they can figure out what the hell you're even doing.
Right. And so if you look at a game like maybe like EverQuest, you know, which was it was certainly not the first MMO, but it was the first that sort of like gained a pretty good mass appeal. But it was still pretty inaccessible, right? The people who played it just loved the shit out of it. But it did stuff like when you died, you leveled down and then you had to go level back up again. Just crazy stuff. And then Blizzard came along and basically they just took it and they shaved off all the rough edges, put it into the Warcraft universe. And because it was, you know, at the time Blizzard was a company known for making highly polished things that are very accessible to people. People knew the Warcraft franchise. It had all the right ingredients and it introduced like 100 million people to MMOs who otherwise would have never really considered it.
And this is my hope with Xbox Game Pass and Google Play Pass is that we basically get introduced through people's trust in those services as entities that prop up a game, right? Where they basically they'll be saying like, hey, this is worth your attention, you should go give it a shot. So that even though people don't know, because I think most people don't know about Mario Maker, really, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's been the challenge. I've had a lot of people who I found it's the easiest way to talk about the game because people who are familiar with Mario Maker, like they understand the concept, build levels and share them with people, you know, and stuff like that. But then you run into a lot of people. It turns out most people who don't know about Mario Maker.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to explain the whole thing from the ground up because, like you said, there's no
framework
for this.
Yeah, my pitch, because like a lot of my friends actually just play on either Xbox or PlayStation. And so they haven't played a Mario game except for Mario Kart for forever. And so, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah. They're like, oh, what are you working on? I'm like, oh, we're about to launch this game. It's like Mario Maker. And they're like, what?
I'm like, what's that?
And they're like, oh, well, so I was like, it's sort of trying to do what Instagram did for photography, but for level design, if that makes sense. So like give everybody the tools to make good stuff and then let them share it. And they're
trying to describe it using existing frameworks and be like, all right, so you know, like Mario or Super Meat Boy. They're like, yeah. And you're like, okay, you know Instagram. Yeah. Like, okay. You know, like Metroid. Mm-hmm. Castlevania, you know, Metroidvania stuff, you know, that, mm-hmm. like that, put
now,
all
now
that.
You're, now you're losing people already.
Programming.
Here's like eight things.
Yeah. Put programming in there, you know.
And you know, then, programming, put that in there.
Yeah. You have Facebook, like get some of that, a little bit of that in there too. And then,
yep.
You know, you had to sprinkle. You know,
speed running.
Sprinkle, you know that, speed put running that in there. There. Yep.
Yeah. So it is kind of interesting because we think back to how we have been marketing this thing and it's been easy to market it to our business partners, you know, at all the platforms as something like Mario Maker, but for their platform, right? Like that's been really easy because everybody in the industry knows about it, right?
Yeah.
But then trying to use that as sort of the comparison point outside as like, hey, we're basically making something like Mario Maker, different, but something like it, same idea, right? But now everywhere. So you can play it no matter what device you're on. And so if like for all those people who want to be able to play this kind of game anywhere, that's kind of like, that's what our marketing sort of focus and thought has been. Mm-hmm. Like now there is one versus, oh shit, actually most people don't even know that this is a kind of game, right? So how do we teach them about that? And I think in a lot of ways that's actually I think why our early access or it's a piece of why our early access didn't go well, because people didn't understand what kind of a game this was, because most people aren't aware of this kind of game. And even if they were, because it's not like out in the world in a really sort of common way with lots of different examples, there's no frame of reference, and there isn't an audience of people who play this kind of game, right? And so if they see it, they're like, oh, cool, you can make levels, but like nobody knows that's for – it's one of the things like I know for myself. I wouldn't have known that such a thing was for me, right? Because I've never done it before. I've never made – like back in StarCraft – early StarCraft days, I remember making maps, right?
Well, I had this
– that was my last time working with an editor, and I wouldn't think like, oh, yeah, it would be really cool to be able to make my own levels and share them. Like I wouldn't think that would be – cool until I've had the experience and see how interesting and meaningful and awesome it can be.
Right, it's a weird circular problem.
Yeah, there's a list someone had made of like, oh, games with level editors, right? And level editors in there. And I was like, that's not really the way to describe this. It's a level editor game. Like it's not the level editing is not like a side fringe thing. It's literally
it's the focal point. Yeah,
but it is hard to explain that. And I think also it's one of those things that's weird and hard to convey because the reality is like most I don't know if we actually know the average build time across our player base, but most people spend between 1 and 4 hours on every level they make. And then some people spend literally 20 plus hours on levels they make.
And some people spend 20 minutes.
Yeah,
because we do have somebody who's published. What was the last thing?
CJ5. Last I saw, he passed 250, but he's got to be.
Yeah, so he's churning out
pushing the 300 mark.
Like every 30 every minutes day. Or something on the clock. Yeah.
Well, and part of it too is we in Levelhead, we have all these ways to browse creators and levels and all this stuff, because one of our design pillars, which we'll probably get into a little bit later, but it was this idea. It's the local newspaper mantra. Names, 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 right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's you should be able to find people all over the place. So put their names on the levels, put their names on scoreboards, and even create – we have the creator browser, which is a place where you can sort and search through lists of all the other players in Levelhead, and you can look up like most prolific, which is just the people who have just made the most levels, right? And just because that list exists, then CJ5 came in.
People trying to be at the top of it.
So CJ5 comes in and he's like, I'm going to be at the top of this list. And so he's just relentlessly pumping out 20-minute builds.
And he's got a huge head start on anybody coming in for the full launch.
Yeah. So, and there's like there's top speed runners, so like people who have the most shoes. People who generate the most play time.
Yeah, people can generate a level of infamy too, right? Where it's like, oh, that's an Usu level. Like, oh man, everyone knows what that means, Or like, oh man, intuition's going to steal your shoes if he sees your name anywhere. Like he will just, your shoes will be, he's like the boogeyman.
But it has been really interesting to see during early access, just because of that, people have been using the names of creators to describe level concepts, right? And so when people say like, oh, well, that's a Specchio level, so you better like only run it on your PC. people know what that means. And what it means is that his level is basically a game in and of itself that has so much logic and physics and stuff happening in it that your frame rate is going to
You know that it's a level that has used Levelhead as a game engine instead of as a level maker.
Right. So it's kind of like if somebody says, this is an Unreal Engine game, so you're going to want to run it on a high-end PC. It's like, oh, this is a Specchio level, so you want to do that, right?
I think the thing that's so exciting about this is, all of us got into game dev sort of sideways, right? I mean, Adam's a fucking PhD in molecular biology and Seth, you're a CFA. Like,
right.
But didn't exactly come into this through the educated path. And so I think the thing that's so exciting
– from psychology.
Yeah, exactly. It's why it's so exciting to participate in this, frankly, this gamble, this attempt by our studio to essentially, move from having – move this game into the creation of a genre to a degree, which is the creation of the maker genre in a really big way for a lot more people, for a lot more people across all platforms to experience, largely because like I'm so excited. The depth of design that people are doing with stuff is just –
that's amazing.
absolutely wild. And I love that we get to like that. That's the thing that we made this time. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to make a game that like, we're very good at making loop driven games at this point. You know what I mean? Like, we can bang those out in 40
loops
hours.
Loops are easy, man.
Loops are so easy.
Leveling system. You just grind it out.
Make the numbers bigger.
Yeah. Just make the numbers bigger, and it's exciting.
Yeah, but making a game that people can just play for 1,000 hours, and that the reality
surprising.
It's always surprising. The reality of playing it is that you're like making stuff, you're tinkering, you know, like you're practicing design skills. Like, yeah, I just,
dude, it's still the case.
I'm so excited
to this day. So like, if people, you know, nothing against Crashlands, because I still think Crashlands is a great game.
It's good. Yeah.
But it's also a very streamlined, pretty standardized experience across players, right? Because it's story driven, and people will have
it's a linear progression of a very small, finite set of items, right?
Yeah.
Everyone sees the same stuff, but
And if you see something different, it's just because you skipped something, right? So you just saw less. you didn't necessarily see something different. And so if somebody posts a Crashlands video somewhere, I tend to not watch it because I've seen a lot of what the game has. Yeah,
the only
to offer,
value to us there is the person's reaction to it, but not the actual thing itself.
Right. So it's about this. Yeah, it's about the person. But with Levelhead, anytime somebody posts a video in the Discord, like I'm there because I know that either because like, A, it's going to be some level that I've never seen because mm-hmm. just got published and the game is constantly churning out new interesting things. It's people pulling off these just ludicrous speedrunning stunts that I like. People are doing stuff and figuring out how to do things in the game that I did not know you could do, and I made it. Like, I wrote the physics.
Well, that's been the fun part, right? Of like, even on the design side, you know, we made like the fact that you can stack items on paths. Like, we didn't realize that until we saw, I don't remember who it was. Someone made basically a swing of spike chains that would basically end up being like a full circle of spiky death at the end of one of these paths. We were like, what? We didn't even know you could do that.
Or even the concept of a one tick switch where you set up a switch so that every single frame it flips on or off. And then people hook that up to cannons and make like a constant fireball like field.
A lava stream.
And of course, CPU burner, I think.
Yeah, of course, the frame rate just completely collapses when you do that too much, but it's still cool. Like, it's cool and weird. And so just the fact that this game just produces an infinite, endless stream of surprises, even for us, you know, as the developers who made the thing, I think is something that I personally am very proud of. You know, I think it's just a super cool thing to get to see, and it makes me very excited about the future of the game and the combinatorial possibilities of, like, if we just add like one new thing, just one new item to the game, then that all of a sudden blows the lid off a whole new suite of possibilities that I still don't know what those even are, right? So anyways, we should probably get on to some questions, I think.
Yeah, let's do it.
Exactly. So we have a bunch of questions from our listeners, and I think we probably have a lot of new people coming into the podcast this week, I would assume. Launches tend to do that.
I mean,
welcome, listeners.
So these questions come from our listeners at podcast.bscotch.net, and we have an upvoting system there, so our players can upvote each other's questions, and we always try to answer the top upvoted questions every week. So this week's questions, top question comes from Mopate Flatunk, who says, "Twice now, just as I've started up Levelhead, my wife has set off the smoke alarms in the house and forced me to jump off the computer to save the family, or at least to get the dog to quit howling. Is this a conspiracy? Is she just trying to get me away so she can play the game? Should I just not let her cook anymore? Or is Levelhead just that smoking?"
I love this.
So the options are conspiracy. Wife is setting off the smoke alarm, quickly running over to the computer and playing Levelhead, as opposed to just saying, hey, can I play?
Well, I mean, the implication here is that
the answer is no.
We'll just say no. So.
Which is, of course, the reasonable response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can to I that, use the computer? I would just say, no. I would just say, you know, you can't have two different accounts on the same
Well, not only that, you can both play at the same time on the same machine.
Also that. So you got to have a sit down. You can be, look, I know that you have been intentionally, and you got to just launch into it. You can't ask questions. That's not how you do a conspiracy theory. You just got to launch into it. Say, yeah. I know that you have been setting off the fire alarm on purpose.
Follow the money.
Yeah. And of course, you follow the money. And I think as with any good conspiracy, any evidence against it is evidence for it. Because evidence against a conspiracy is obviously just part of the conspiracy.
Yeah, so
and the more evidence there is against it, the more likely it is that the conspiracy goes deeper than you thought.
Yeah, exactly. If you lock the door behind you, it's like there's no way she could have gotten in there if you're with her the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that she definitely couldn't have gotten in there.
Smoke alarm goes off.
It must be the clone that she's brought in to allow her to play.
Yep. You
know? Yeah. Like, yep. Probably the kids are involved. Maybe the dog is involved.
How convenient that she's cooking at the same time every day. Yeah. What is
almost
this about?
Almost too convenient.
It's too convenient. Yeah. You know? Maybe this goes deeper. Maybe this goes into, you know, the food industry. We all know.
Yeah. Probably Monsanto's involved.
Monsanto's probably involved. Like, let's be real.
GMO. There's probably GMO.
They're going to be like, here's what we're going to do.
Something.
Well, there's also Monsanto cloned your wife, which is why that's how you go. Two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's how one of them is setting off the smoke alarm. The other one is running over and playing Levelhead for 4 minutes while you get the smoke alarm turned off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there is an alternative here, which is
– That seems unlikely. Yeah, unlikely, but let's hear it.
So I've got – we're going to – I'm going to – so I know Occam's razor – says that the simplest explanation is probably the right one.
No,
so obviously,
it's not what it says. It says because this misconception always it grinds my gears.
Oh, sorry.
Not what
go
it
ahead.
Says.
Correct.
It says Occam's razor says unless you have further evidence for a more complicated solution, you shouldn't believe anything more complicated than the simplest. It doesn't say that it's true or that it's
right.
Likely.
Okay. Right.
It's it not just that says it's, you have it's not no that, right.
That's fair.
You have no right to make it more complicated.
Right.
You can't
if
possibly
got all the evidence
that.
You need, then you're good. So obviously, based on Occam's razor, the elaborate conspiracy theory is the correct one. But
yes.
I've got a simple implausible explanation.
What's that?
Or an implausible alternative, which is maybe she's just setting off the smoke alarm. But also, you could just get her a second controller for $20 and then she can just play co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's another possibility. So it's probably that she is doing all these things. She's conspiring with Monsanto. Probably the pharmaceutical industry is involved as well. There's clones. There's dogs.
Yeah, there's such an easy fix.
But it's only because she didn't realize that if you just have a second controller, then you're good. Yeah. So so just go ahead and do that. Next question is from Fraser, who says, how did you decide on Thursday, April 30th, to launch Levelhead? Why not the 29th? Or the first, or anything else in that range. So, anything else in that range? I think we've covered the range.
So the question is, how do you pick
dates.
A launch?
Yeah. How do you do that?
So in our case, it ends up being much more complicated because of the multi-platform launch. So every platform has days that it prefers you launch on. So it used to be the case on mobile, which is where sort of the studio grew up. That Thursdays were the day because it used to be when the store turned over. That's no longer the case, right? So the store turns over every day now.
Just constantly.
Just constantly. And new stuff's constantly popping in. So that doesn't even make any sense. I think
it doesn't even make any sense.
But
the other part of rationale is for press, right? Which is if press are writing up articles on Thursday and Friday, then those are just going to stick around at the top of their pages over the weekend because professional press don't work over the weekend.
Yeah. So there's the press angle, and then the other one is just the reality of looking at the sine waves of player time. So players play the most Thursday through Sunday, basically. It's not surprising. It's sort of like the weekend. It's when things are happening. Tuesdays are always like a crater, and then it sort of slowly starts returning on Wednesdays.
Mondays are bad. Tuesdays are real bad.
Mondays aren't even that bad. Tuesdays, I don't know what happens. It's just like everyone's like, oh, God, I'm in. The week is happening.
I think it's like on Sunday, people are like, oh, fuck yeah. It's still the weekend. Huh! And they're like, they're playing games. And then Monday comes around, and they're like, oh, I'm still hanging in there. I still got this. You know, and they're still playing a little bit. And then Tuesday comes
around. Tuesday's like, oh, God, I've done too little work now because I'm already into the week.
Digging out. Yeah. So we tend to prefer either a Thursday or Friday launch because just because of those factors. But then when you look at the specifics, again, depending on platform, like that's where the that's actually why it took so long, is because we have to talk to six different platforms to be like, hey, we're thinking about something in this range. What is happening and what would be good? And even then,
they can't tell us who else is launching because it's all their secret.
Sometimes they'll be like,
they can say this might be a bad time, but they won't tell us why.
Yeah. And so the thing is, even with this launch, with you know, picking it, I think we picked it like about two or three months ago, with this launch date, talking to all the partners, it's still the case that one of them was like, well, we're actually like super busy because there's a bunch of updates coming out for very specific games that like week, that day, a couple days. So you might not get featuring like that day, but we could maybe give you something like a little later if that's okay. We're like, yeah, that's fine.
But again, it's all very non-committal. It's always couched in like you might not get featuring and you may get some later.
Mm-hmm. Which could is really be. Weird, frankly, when you think about it. Because like if the game does really well, they make a shitload of money.
Well, so they're making it our responsibility for the thing to do well so they don't have to take a risk, you know?
Well, but it's also a zero-sum game, right? So like they want to keep their options open because if they featured Levelhead instead of Fortnite, that was probably a mistake. I'm just going to say. They want to feature whatever's going to make them $1 billion instead of less than that.
That's true.
So they're never going to commit to anything until like – if 30 seconds before the featuring was about to go out, all of a sudden, you know, Activision showed up and they're like, Candy Crush 3 is coming out. We skipped 2. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's where the featuring's going. That's it. It's over. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we try to plan all these events. And as far as timing, the day of, I think technically the game comes out in Japan in the evening of 4/29 because of how time works. And then for us, like we basically just wake up early that day and then just click all the buttons and let things propagate. And certain things are scheduled. So for the most part, I think the game should be totally rolled out everywhere by like 9 a.m. CST on everything.
On that Thursday,
But we'll be like on Thursday, we'll wake up and when like 7:30 or 8, we'll be pressing all the buttons for most of the things that aren't fully released yet. So Steam and I think Google and Apple will be actually back there mashing buttons. So yeah. It's going
to
be exciting.
So there you go. So there's like 90 different things you have to do to figure out when to launch your game, and it's always the wrong day.
Yep, no matter what you do.
Yeah. And all 90 of those things are mutually incompatible.
They're mutually incompatible, so you just pick the least shitty one. We've known people, some friends of ours who have launched, for example, like on a Tuesday on Steam, which turns out is Steam's maintenance day, which normally maintenance is like 5 minutes. NBD, normally. No big deal. Except every now and then, unpredictably, it's just the whole day. The whole day, Steam is down for maintenance. They're a lot better than at that nowadays than they were back then. Mm-hmm. But your launch day might actually just get deleted on a platform completely, which really, really sucks. Mm-hmm. So that's why you launch on like 8 platforms. Anyway, all right. Next question comes from Fly Hoppy Axe Rompa. Sam, a long time ago, you spoke about how at the end of Crashlands development, you had to pull back on your art skills a bit to make sure the game looked consistent. Do you find yourself doing the same thing with Levelhead?
I think the reality is that where I want to go on the art side is just it's a slightly different style, some updated stylings and stuff. It's not so much that the art has gotten as so much better compared to the difference between like start of Crashlands versus end of Crashlands, as I feel like the sort of sensibility around what I want to do with the style. And you can see this basically in, like the background art for the campaign, right? Or the landmarks for the campaign. Like they look a little bit different.
These are the last things that were made, I believe, right? The last art assets.
Yeah, I finished them in January. And everything else was done before that. And I've also taken two or three classes during Levelhead's development to increase my skills and all this stuff. And so the reality is more so that I want to push the art into a different direction, more so than that it started getting like what I would just call better, which is what happened in Crashlands. And so I've certainly been holding back on that because you can't just like switch the style up as you go. But when it comes to, you know, animation or whatever else, like there's a ton of stuff that I do want to add more of. It's just that we haven't been in a place where we needed to add things that are highly animated or whatever else. And so I haven't, there's a lot of things I actually just haven't had the opportunity to go take another crack at because of sort of how development has worked out for this game.
Yeah, I also think about seeing – so I've played Crashlands quite a bit over the past week because we've been getting it ready for this free Epic deal. And one of the things that really kind of stood out to me in there was remembering how little time we had for art development during Crashlands and how efficient we had to be with everything. So one of those things is that almost nothing in the world is animated.
Yeah.
Right, like the trees, the sawgrass, everything is just completely static. And for those of our listeners who remember the MMO we made in a weekend, Fields of Goop, everything is animated.
The server is still running, so if you want to play,
it's weird over MMO,
on our itch page.
But we have all these like cool looking like weird alien trees and stuff, and they just kind of like they make weird squishing movements and stuff, and everything is moving, and that's definitely something that. That Sam, I've seen you progress on over the course of Levelhead's development is this moving from sort of like a begrudging acceptance for animating things to a passion for animating things.
Oh yeah. I've really, really enjoyed it. And it has moved to the point where like if I don't get to make something move, then I'm a little bummed about it now. Cause just everything's better.
Part of it is like, it used to be so hard for you to do just because that was where your art skills were was like rendering an object by redrawing it from a different angle or like as it's spinning
turning things is always a nightmare for me, but
it's just fine too much, you know, which is why I'm really excited for if we do a top down perspective or this kind of like open world concept for the next game, just getting to see how that feels, like how the world feels and how alive everything's going
to
be.
And being able to do big art pieces, because it's also still a thing, which is that Levelhead still doesn't have big pieces of art. It still doesn't. Like the tiles are the biggest thing, but that's just sort of by being a mash of things together. In Crashlands, we had a rule, which is that nothing could be more than one tile because we couldn't figure out how to do it in a whole variety of ways.
That purling noise, you know, it's
brutal.
The
world duration. And so in Levelhead, we have some things that are bigger than a tile, but for the most part, everything's pretty constrained in terms of size in the same sort of way. There's you know, players can make – you can make like fortresses and stuff or like big, you know, chunky trees and things. But there's no art asset that is itself
– you're not going to have one thing honking. That's like a 10 by 10.
Exactly.
You know.
Which would be awesome, and I would love to make it. And so that's one of those things where it's like I do want to push in some of those directions and mainly get away from – I mean, frankly, it's a holdback from where we started in games, which was do game jams. You just got to get the art done, minimal get systems done, that need to build them, and everything needs to be functional in the same sort of way. Into moving more of this, you know, systems rich games that have just a lot of weird, interesting, different stuff going on. It's been really good. I think Levelhead's pushed me forward in a ton of different ways, and. It's been a really good opportunity to do some animation in particular, and I want to push that even further as we continue. So it should be fun.
Yes. All right. Next question comes from Chalosis. Do you have design pillars that you followed for Levelhead? Something like, we only add features that are fun with touch controls, or make it impossible to create a bad looking level, or some other generality like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we had the one that we started with early on was that it should be – not that it should be impossible to make a bad-looking level, but that it should be easy to make a good-looking level.
Yeah. Two different things. So basically, if you just do something, then it's going to look pretty good.
So if you just grab just the standard terrain tile and just make some – just make a level out of it, that the level should still look visually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That was where the idea of these context-aware tiles that like change from being a tree trunk to being a shrub, you know, depending on what you're doing.
And then if you want to push it where you make it even like actually even prettier, it's still just super easy to do, right? You just change the backdrops in some places, put some paths down. Like it's all very simple to make something that looks really good. I think that was one. And then one of the other important ones was basically that we didn't want the tools to get in the way. We played both Mario Maker. We've of course used a bunch of tools to build our own stuff, you know, in Inkscape, Photoshop, whatever, Game Maker. And the reality is that any slowness, any friction that is present in the tooling always shapes the designs because you can't do certain things.
You just do more or less of things depending on how easy or hard things are to do.
And so that was a big, big one, which is like, okay, so for every single one of these tools, whether it's multi-select, the grab, whatever else, the use of it has to be such that it can be really, really slick. And that does go for across all devices. So that's why we ended up just a few months ago, we did a huge remapping of the controls on console because we played it, tried to build a level with it. And we were just like, this is annoying. This is super annoying.
Technically could do it. It just didn't feel very good.
Yeah, we couldn't. And it required like basically 2 hours of playing the game and making a bunch of notes. And then Seth and I talked about it and then actually busting up the controller systems. We had to rebuild the controller.
It was a full rebuild of the entire input system to make that work.
The other outcome of that is that we then had fully rebindable keys, which was pretty rad.
Except on Switch because, their controller keeps gaining and losing buttons depending on
it. It's too unpredictable.
One we just didn't have time to solve because it's a lot. But.
Yeah, so it was those
although
two.
Although also Switch now allows you to remap controls yourself from on the controller.
That's true.
Now it's not even our problem.
There you go.
But yeah, so those were the two big ones. And then beyond that, as far as the platforming goes, we want it to be fast and we wanted death to be basically instant in the sense that if you died and you restarted, it's just – you're just there now. And a lot of that mainly came from playing Super Meat Boy, which basically when the design – when the respawn time is that short, it allows you to make more challenging levels that don't feel terrible.
It takes away a lot of the frustration and a lot of the terribleness of difficulty.
Yeah.
Because Super Meat Boy embraces even further by having, all of your ghost clones, right? Also running alongside and then dying along with you, in the playback. Fanatic. So you just get this really fun vision where now all of those failures don't feel like failures at all. They just feel like steps along the path to success,
That's such a brilliant design because when you beat a level in Super Meat Boy, you get to immediately recall and watch all the lessons you've learned on the way to get there.
It's one of those things too that people that wanted us to have in Levelhead and that we talked about. But there's a huge difference between what Levelhead is and what Super Meat Boy is, which is Super Meat Boy is deterministic, right? Which means you can then have all these like animated ghosts going on and like doing things according to time that then makes sense because the level. If they like hit a saw blade, the saw blade is actually there, and like that kind of stuff, right? That we don't have in Levelhead because Levelhead is not deterministic.
We've deliberately allowed for things like randomness, not just in things like enemy AI, which has small degrees of randomness to it, but also in things like the programming logic that players can use.
Yeah, because it's not random; it's just not deterministic, right? Because If some of it is random. I mean, it can be, but it doesn't require randomness to become non-deterministic, right? Because now if a player waits half a second before stepping on a switch this time, right, then now the saw blade is there this time, but it isn't for the ghost who you then see just suddenly die for no reason, right?
Yeah. So having all of this complex logic and also just the lack of constraints, we went through and we played a lot of other level. There's a ton of level building games on mobile. They tend to be very free to play heavy, where like they make you buy blocks, so you can put them into your level.
The game itself that you're building levels for is not particularly fun, which is the trouble with almost all of them.
Yeah. So we had to just make sure that we allowed for all that kind of stuff. So as far as design pillars go with that, we thought of the game as having, if I remember correctly, three important pillars. Mm-hmm. So one is the gameplay. So that's where looking to games like Super Meat Boy and taking inspiration from the speed of the gameplay and the ease of replayability and stuff like that. We did a lot of experimentation. We just played a ton of different games to figure out like what makes a good platformer? Like what makes it feel good to play? What does it mean to make a responsive game?
And also what are people used to? Because one of the really interesting problems was momentum inheritance, right? Mm-hmm. That we tried in all kinds of ways and we played other games and found that basically everybody does it really differently. And so it was just one of those weird things where we're like, you can actually get away with anything when it comes to momentum inheritance because someone has done it in a successful game and it felt okay once you got used to it in that context, right?
Yeah, that pissed me off so much, though, because you would think, like, there's a way for this to feel good, right? And so when you go around and play other games, I mean, the first one I went to look at was Mario. And they have you inherit momentum differently from different things. So if you're on a moving platform that's moving side to side, you inherit 50%. So if you jump, you won't land on the same place on the platform. You'll move back a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And so every game does this a little bit differently. And I think the reason is that platformers inherently require you to be defying all laws of physics all the time. So the yes. idea that, like, for example, you could like step and land on a platform that it itself is falling, and that you would then just like move down with it and then just be able to jump off of it. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing, right? Like, if imagine you're on an elevator. Everything
falls at the same speed, so you'd just be chasing it forever.
Yeah. Imagine you're on an elevator. The elevator starts free falling. You are now essentially weightless inside the elevator because you're falling and it is falling. You're not standing on it, right? You can't mm-hmm. jump off of it. You'd just be like floating around helplessly freaking out the whole time. So all of these things about what makes a platformer actually playable require the programmer to not use a real physics engine and instead to break all the laws of physics.
It's a bespoke physics experience is what it is, mm-hmm. you know.
It is. It's all fake. And so learning about that and then trying to develop theories about it. So even things like how fast should your character accelerate? And what we landed on was – at roughly the same speed of gravity. So that way when you jump up, like let's say you jump up to the right.
And you mean the game's gravity.
The game's gravity, yeah. So as you say, like jump up and to the right, and then you hit left that you are able to actually like sort of make a diagonal return back to your starting mm-hmm. point, but that has to be somewhat precise, right? So that it's not like in a game like Super Meat Boy, it's very floaty. Gravity is really low, but also your acceleration is really low. So you kind of like jump and you kind of like weave around in the air. And so we looked at all these different things like the relationship between speed of your character, speed of gravity and stuff like that. So the gameplay has to be really good. And that was the first pillar, because if you're building a game that is about creating levels –
If all the levels suck to play.
If all the levels – So we said like if the game itself – feels really good and is joyful and fun and interesting, if just the core mechanics are interesting, mm-hmm. then almost any level somebody makes is fun.
Yeah, it'll still feel good even if it's a boring level, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we knew that we had arrived there as soon as we added the grappler. And I don't know if you remember this, Sam, mm-hmm. but we added the grappler and we gave it a direction. So you could jump off of the box and then pick up the box. So we didn't have the package in the game as an object. And instead we just had the throwable blocks. And I made this level that I just called Writer's Block. This was like in dev, we could just name the levels. And the whole purpose of the level was you started with a box and you had to package jump your way through the level. So you had to use the box to get over all these spikes and stuff. And then that opened up the conversation of like, what if this was just part of it? And then all of a sudden we were like, oh my God, this is a game about packages. Why don't we, why don't we just give you the package? And then now you have this interesting tool. And so that kind of blew the lid open on that. So then the second pillar was the editor, which is the editor has to make it incredibly easy to make good looking levels that are fun and engaging. It should be really easy to test them. And we shouldn't put all kinds of weird restrictions on things. So,
it should be, and also should be simple to use, but difficult to, or but with a huge
it should have a high
depth,
yeah, like a high mastery ceiling. Yeah. So the editor should be obvious, and so you'll see things like if you put down a cannon, then that cannon will just be shooting. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to hook it up to anything. Like it just works on its own. But then there's that extra layer of depth where you can hook it up to a switch and now the cannon can respond to things in the level. And so we wanted to make it so that just by putting stuff down, your level would – things would just be happening and you could make an interesting experience. So then the third pillar was the
social
one. Yeah. So that's basically saying the game has to be fun. It has to be easy to make levels, but none of that matters if people don't play your level.
Yeah, the thing we just wanted to get away from was, and that really, to me, the biggest problem with a lot of UGC games in general is that
that's user-generated content. Yeah, UGC.
Yeah, is just the issue of like you build these robust tools, these robust systems for people to make incredible stuff,
but and then people just pour their hearts into some creation.
Yeah, and then it just dies into absolute obscurity. And
which is the same thing as making a video game.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So we joke, we're like, I mean, we could completely recreate the microcosm of game dev, if we wanted to, but I don't want to do that. I don't, you don't make a game so you can perfectly mimic reality, because that's not usually the fun part. The fun part is having people play your shit, right? Which is very hard to do.
The fun part is when good things happen.
Yeah. And so the thing I'm most excited about is the fact that I think some of our top creators, I think they passed 30 days of playtime already. Or very close.
I think Specchio is right there.
Yeah. And so when you think about that, total time generated, Specchio, in terms of the time he's generated for his levels only, has generated more playtime than a lot of people who are doing indie dev.
Yep.
Because of how the systems work in the game, right? And it's wild to think about. Absolutely wild to think about from a creative enterprise sort of standpoint. And so, yeah, the play system, the social system, was entirely designed to make sure that if you wanted to, that you could get some dang plays on your level. And not like you're not guaranteed a billion. You're not guaranteed to be a millionaire. But the whole thing is like move the floor from zero to some. That's it. That's all we're trying to do, right? Yeah. Because that's literally it. And so I think for launch, it's –
Well, and also it's not just move the floor. It's also give players some control over it, right?
Yeah.
Because if you need some tools, even if they there's no way for you just to have exposure for free. That's not how – it's not possible because that's not how anything works, right? But there should be some way, some cost, right? Some effort that you can put in where the result is that people can actually see your level, right? And there needs to be something you control that actually allows for that to happen. And so anywhere that's missing when it comes to a social feature, then – now you're just toast. Now you're dependent on external social features to actually share things. So we wanted that to all be internal.
Yeah. So the marketing department to me is there as much as I think Levelhead's editor is just awesome. I think the Switch system is its own big innovation in there. I think when you talk about genre innovations, I think to me the marketing department is the most important one for what we did, which is make it so that this is a game where if you make something, you can actually get it played instead of a game where if you make something, you got to go parade around on Twitter and Reddit and everywhere else and pray for someone to.
Now, I want to give credit where credit is due, because we got the idea of the marketing department from Ludum Dare, the worldwide online game jam, who they have nowadays thousands of games created in a weekend, and they have a rating system. So people who make games as part of this competition over the weekend can then go play other people's games and give them ratings. And in the earlier days of Ludum Dare, they had this problem where people were making games and then they weren't playing other people's games, but were still complaining that nobody was playing their game. Right? Yep. Mm-hmm. And it stands to reason that if you want other people to play your game, then you should play their game, right? Yep. It's a fair exchange. You play theirs, you give it ratings and reviews. They play yours, they give you a rating and review. So it's an exchange. So they set it up so that the more you play other people's games and rate them, the higher your game moves on the list. And so that way, by participating in the community, you get the exposure, people play your game. So we saw that, and we were just like, this is perfect. This is genius. All we have to do is just figure out how to adapt this, to what it is that we're doing. And so that's where the marketing department and then the idea of exposure bucks kind of came in.
And that was from the Oatmeal comic, right? Which is the whole joke about how people try to pay artists all the time, which is
exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. Gonna
and so the extra layer that we put on top of it was this concept of graduating. Because Ludum Dare has an interesting constraint, which is a whole bunch of games get made all at once, and then that's all that there is.
Mm-hmm. Then you just end up with a sorted list at the end of it, but that's fine because it's just a sorted finite list.
Yeah. Yep. The problem that we had to also solve was that what about if there's, say, 1,000 levels a day, every day, forever?
Yeah. Then the top of that chart becomes just impossible to ever reach.
Now you've got the App Store charts Or the Steam Top.
Exactly. Now you've recreated. Price, right? Yeah. Now you've exactly recreated the exact same problem that we have on every storefront.
Right. So you don't want a stagnant list because your players come in and they want to see new stuff. They want to come in every day and pop up in the marketing department and be like, look at all these amazing new levels. And they just play for hours and hours and see all new things. And so these concepts are still at odds with each other. So that's where our solution of graduation came from, which is
– You need to sync. We need to get stuff out of there.
And so your level gets enough players. It graduates out of the marketing department. Now it lives in the tower where from that point on, we are no longer responsible for for that level. So people can find it through all kinds of other means. But we've given you your guaranteed plays. Your level has been seen by a lot of people. It's been played by a bunch of people. And now it's time to let some new levels
see
have their time in the sun.
Yeah.
And so I think of, kind of no matter what happens, with the launch, I'm personally very excited about just seeing how people respond to all these systems. And I'm proud of the way that we've been able to develop this thing and kind of piece all these weird disparate ideas together into something that seems to work very well.
Yeah. As much as I will say that we've talked about early access being a bit of a rough edge for us in terms of the sort of business side of it.
Business move, yeah.
It has been absolutely phenomenal for the creation side of it. Yeah. Because it's been great.
For morale. Business part aside, but actually like having players play it and give.
Yeah, it's been great. And so, yeah, big thanks to all of our people from early access, including our our big paragons who showed us stuff that was possible in the game that we didn't even know was possible in a lot of ways, or brought us into a different understanding of how speedrunning works or whatever else. It's been very good making this game with a sort of a community at the same time, as opposed to just being in a cave.
Yeah, and that community has really pushed the development of the game in interesting ways that we ourselves didn't necessarily think about, or we weren't aware that certain things mattered. And so I do think it's the case that before early access, we were thinking about the game a lot more in terms of traditional platformers. Mm-hmm. Once we started getting the game into players' hands and seeing what people were doing with the Switch system, we were just like, okay, this is it. Like, this is where the real meat of the editor is.
Yeah.
And so we added a lot of new and interesting switches and tried to make interactions with items a lot deeper and stuff. And so hopefully we can continue to, push push that in interesting ways in the future. All right. So I think that's all we have time for this week. Do you guys have any final thoughts on launch?
Well, welcome to all new people who've never listened to the podcast before. So this podcast comes out the day before launch, right? But then it's just the top one available until the following week, right?
Right.
So I imagine a whole bunch of people are going to come in here for the first time, not knowing who we are, having just gotten Levelhead. So welcome. I'm super pumped to have all you new people on and appreciate you spending your time and money to join us on this adventure. So a huge welcome to all the noobs, and I hope you're in the Discord because that's where all the community action is.
Next week we'll do, we will talk about the launch, so you'll hear some of what has transpired.
What didn't?
Yep.
It's going to be something. It might be a lot of things.
Oh, God. It's going to be something.
Cool.
And we'll look back fondly on this moment when we were laughing. About what might go wrong.
Such naive children.
As we all of our eyebrows are scorched, singed off from everything being on fire.
It's going to be a time.
Who knows? We will see. All right. So that's all the time we have for this week. We would like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators, especially this week, who keep our Discord running. We've also got a few new moderators coming in, so thank you very much for stepping up and helping us to keep these rambunctious folks under control. If you want to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to the Discord. We've got a way for you to donate to support the podcast, and links to a past archive of all of our previous 255 episodes. So thank you all for listening. See you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.